Today on the Inland Journal podcast, hard decisions made in Spokane's Meade School District. On Tuesday night, the Meade School Board cut $11.3 million from the district's budget. It's a big hit for a district that serves a fairly affluent part of town. It wasn't quite as severe, though, as the $12 million district officials thought they'd have to cut. Meade is one of many Eastern Washington school districts feeling the squeeze as the state's new basic education funding formula continues to be implemented. The burden of funding so-called basic education is shifting from a combination of state and local funds to the state exclusively. As part of that, the legislature put a cap on how much money districts could seek from local taxpayers for special programs. That means fewer dollars available for things not considered as basic, the sweeteners that many parents and students have come to appreciate. At Meade, those sweeteners include the Riverpoint Academy, referred to by supporters as RA. It's the district's major science and technology program. And Meade, the acronym for the district's alternative high school. The sweeteners also include special education, paraeducators, English language learning or ELL programs, school nurses, counselors, and a variety of other things. When administrators announced the district's projected deficit, they developed a long list, $15 million worth of possible cuts from which the board could pick and choose. All of the above were represented in some form. RA and Meade were slated for at least temporary closure. Last month, the board held a public meeting to explain the possibilities to parents, and then two more meetings to let parents and students advocate for their favorite programs.
Hey, good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to provide input about the plan. These are difficult decisions, and your openness to consider community input is admirable and very much appreciated. I'm Kim Perdue, and I'm the English Language Development Specialist at Mountainside Middle School. I am here representing Meade's English learner community, consisting of over 400 students and their families. They have survived a lot, but I'm not sure how they'll survive these cuts.
I find irony in the idea or notion that RA is being considered for closure as it pertains to a business. RA has embraced the entrepreneurial spirit since inception, and it continues to be a crown jewel within the portfolio of schools, if you will, within the Meade School District. A business owner would not create a business that is thriving beyond what they're capable of producing with the idea that they would close it only to start it up again a short time later. It's financially expensive, it's disruptive, in this case, to the students that are currently a part of Riverpoint Academy. And it's virtually impossible to recreate what's already been created.
Members of the board, thank you for hearing my comments. I parent my nephew, who was slated to attend MEAD this fall. I recently learned that the alternative school will not be closed, but moved to Meade High School, that's the plan. MEAD's off-campus location is in consideration of student safety. The higher student-teacher ratio is a way of keeping tabs on a student group more prone to violence and self-harm. For these reasons, we turned to the alternative school for help with my nephew who fell through the cracks in the larger high school setting. We fear what will happen if he is forced to return to the high school even under the guise of an alternative program.
The board waited until the legislature adjourned and administrators could digest how the final budget would trickle down to the North Spokane District. Assistant Superintendent Wayne Leonard lamented that of the several essential items sought by the district, few were acted upon by the legislature, and there was little relief to stave off the looming budget cuts. And so Tuesday night's board meeting came. One by one, the board dispensed with other items until finally, board president Carmen Green announced a bit sarcastically that the item for which everyone was waiting was finally up for discussion. But there was no discussion in this public forum anyway, and the vote to institute the budget cuts came quickly. Immediately afterward, Green began reading a statement saying how difficult the process and decision had been for the board members. Her voice cracked, and she handed the paper to fellow board member Chad Burchard. He said the board would form a community task force to help it move forward. Counselors would be made available to help students and staff in the two programs that will be eliminated. After the board meeting, Green, Burchard, and outgoing Superintendent Tom Rockefeller agreed to take a few questions from me and from Spokesman Review education reporter Jim Allen. District administrators had drawn up those cuts, about $15 million. $11.3 million were implemented. So which programs in that first list were spared?
Classified nurses, the social workers, the high school counselors,
EL program.
So the para-eds, coaches. The instructional coaches,
people. As many para-pros in special ed as we could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we tried to, and places where we went half on some things, you know, just reduced hours instead of entirely reducing them, which, you know, with the new SEB plan, doesn't help us that much, you know, because we are going to have to still pay benefits, and we were hoping, but you know, you still have coverage issues, so got to make sure you have paras there to cover recess and start of school and end of school and all of those things.
At the public hearings, which testimony swayed you the most?
You know, we heard a lot from River Point Academy kids, and there were three of them sitting out here who were pretty teary at the end, so, you know, it certainly affected me, but when it came down to how are we going to deliver education to all students, that didn't help. We just couldn't save it. You know, I would say they had compelling testimony and all of that, and it certainly sat with us pretty hard. I think, you know, the English language learners, I don't know how you have kids come in the circumstances that they sometimes come to us in who are refugees, and they're already in culture shock, and then we reduce services to them to help them acclimate and love our community and love our country. And I think you don't want to put them in a difficult position, and that didn't seem like a good place. And nursing staff, that just felt like a opportunity for something to go bad somewhere.
In the counseling with the
social workers,
social emotional issues the students are dealing with, we just couldn't go to the social workers. Matter of fact, we'd like to have more.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's an epidemic, and we didn't want to cut there.
Jim Allen asked Rockefeller if he had estimates about the number of staff who might be cut.
We have to do over the next 3 or 4 days is we do have retirees, a pool of about 15 retirees. Mm-hmm. We have another pool of people that are on leave, 11 or 12 on leave, and then we are going to have to institute the K-3. So we're actually going to be hiring staff. So we have 35 or 40 positions that need to be filled right now. So the best thing I can do for you is if you gave me a call on Friday or Monday, I could say, this is what we're going to have to reduce. What we're really trying to zero in on is not having to reduce or give anybody a slip, so to speak, or whatever.
Pink slip.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's really hard to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, like I say, is we're going to have to go through and find out where these people can move to, who they might bump by contractual rights or whatever else.
When you sit down with some of Spokane's legislators, what are you going to say to them?
Well,
we don't swear in public.
You know, I actually had a chance to talk to Shelley Short, you know, just doing some last-minute begging and pleading, which didn't really help. and she was, you know, one of the things I think that we're going to have to address is the prototypical school model. There are some places where it's on and it fits, and there are many places where it's such a gross deficiency difference between the reality of the services we need to provide and, I mean, just like the school teachers. For a district of 10,500 students that were funded for 1.5. So when they say they're fully funding, you know, paying for school, they're saying, oh, well, yeah, we're paying for that 1.5 school nurse for you and their benefits, but you have 20. And so they're not paying for the 18 and a half others and their benefits. And that's where local levy dollars were really supplementing. And so there are places like that throughout that prototypical model that really need to be addressed. And I know our organization, we were just at a regional meeting, and the organization, the WASDA, that will be, you know, something that we talk about moving forward.
One important development that came from the legislative session was a decision to allow local districts to raise the limit on their local school levies. That had been severely curtailed last year as part of the shift to basic education funding from local to state. And so will the district consider another local school levy?
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to talk about it, because that's $6.5 million, and next year we'll be looking at implementing SEB. We just, you know, Avista's raising their rates. So
two schools to open.
We have two schools to open, right?
Plus a third one.
Plus a third one maybe after that. Yeah, right. You know, and their cost of living increase is, what, 2.1%?
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's another couple million dollars, you know, in pay increases to staff. So I don't see a foreseeable fix for this, unless maybe we're just taking baby steps toward the legislature really fully understanding the impact of McCleary. And I think they're starting to understand it, and then saying, and then how do we kind of wrap our arms around not bringing everybody down. You know, we're school districts that were locally funded, and we were, you know, delivering a high level of services to students. Instead of bringing everybody down to this lower level, should we have really put some measures in to lift some others up? I don't know. I mean, I don't know the answer to it either. I think it's complicated, so.
Did the district do the right thing last summer in giving generous pay raises to teachers?
Well, there are going to be some people who are going to say, no, that was the dumbest thing you ever did. you know, I think we are in competition for people who are graduating from college to do a lot of things where they can make a lot more money. I have a daughter and a son who just recently, well, graduated in the last several years, who went on to, you know, tech kinds of companies, and they're making, just out of college, a lot of money, more money than it certainly we made out of college, or even comparable, and where a teacher is making probably first year out of college less than half of what they're making. And so how are we going to attract people to that profession, high quality, people who are in it for the right reasons? I think you have to look at that. And I know when we were interviewing superintendents, Lake Washington, the woman who interviewed, you know, I asked her about that from Lake Washington's perspective, and she said, you know, we have Google and Microsoft, and they want us to attract quality teachers here. So nobody flinched at the pay raises to attract and retain those teachers. So, you know, you could argue on both sides. Could we have been a little lower? You know, I don't think that everybody thought we were. Maybe they thought there were going to be fixes, and they counted on that, you know, and we didn't really think that was going to happen. But
and I think it's important to note that even with the raises, we still would have had cuts. Now, they wouldn't have been as deep, but we still would have had at least 50% of our cuts. So we were in trouble no matter what.
Yeah, we didn't.
Even with the raises.
We didn't even have enough to cover a cost of living increase.
Yeah. Right.
Were the big raises granted by Westside districts the domino that led to pay raises given by districts here?
Absolutely. I mean, when you know, a union group sees that and they say, wow, we're, you know, the door is open. And when you have the state superintendent of public instruction come out and say, hey, it's all for you.
Yeah.
It's kind of put us in a position of non-negotiation, really, not much. So it was a tough spot.
And all the districts knew that this isn't forever money. It's a one-time money. And
The regionalization.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you do a four-year budget, you can tell it's not there. And honestly, nobody wanted to, a lot of people didn't want to hear it and didn't believe it. And we're like, they were real numbers.
Yeah. Well, and that regionalization, so like Washington gets 18% regionalization, and it never goes away. So they got to pass that on to their teachers and call it a day, and didn't it didn't address, you know, they had no effect on their budget. So they didn't have to make any cuts. We're a little different.
Those are Meade School Board members Carmen Green and Chad Burchard, along with Superintendent Tom Rockefeller. Other Spokane area school districts face their own budget shortfalls, some large, some small. Next week, Spokane schools will hold 3 open houses to allow parents and others to see the district's proposals for reducing spending. Thank you for joining us for this Inland Journal podcast. Next time, we'll talk with Spokane Mayor David Condon. To find and subscribe to the podcast, search for Inland Journal in iTunes, NPR One, or Google Play, or find it on the Inland Journal page at SpokanePublicRadio.org. You can tell us what you think of the program by sending comments to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Doug Nadvornik.